jobs because somebody at some point decided they didn't want to do it and they're going to pay someone else to do it for them. So even the best jobs can be at times pretty hard. I've had a variety of jobs in my past. Now, honestly, when I first started out working, it was mostly my brawn and not my brain that people preferred. I bussed tables, carried big trays of dishes back to the kitchen and washed them, sometimes barely getting the clean ones out on the stack before the cook was ready to throw something else on the plate to go out the window. And some of you have been in restaurant work, you know how that works. There's only so much inventory. You've got to keep those dishes moving fast. I've also driven forklifts. I did that as a graduate student at the university and paid my way through school. So I drove forklifts and lifted pallets and counted books. Books and more books. That's just what I did. And something else I did, I worked in a big grocery, distribution center. And they had dry goods, and then they had refrigerated goods, and then they had freezer goods. And you dressed up like an Eskimo when you did the freezer section. And you could only go in for, I don't know what, so like 1 hour and 10 minutes, and then you had to come out into the warmth and get a break. So that wasn't all that bad. You got more breaks when you worked the freezer section. And then you'd stack these tall pallets to go to the stores, and they backed them into a pickup or a tractor trailer to haul off to the stores. So, hey, most of my jobs, until I came west, I was appreciated more for my brawn than for my brain. It's a good thing I still don't work with my brawn because, you see, I really am not blessed that way. So I really had to lean otherwise, and so most of my work is on my brain. Hey, Sal, could you help someone at the door, please? All right. So, what was I? Brain! You need my brain to work. It's supposed to. I'm counting on it. So I started teaching junior high. Anyone teach junior high? There is a special place in heaven for people who've taught junior high. You know what I mean? If you've been there, there is a special blessing. And so I taught junior high for 3 years before I became a pastor. So now I minister mostly with my brain, except when people move. That's the brawn that church pastors and church leadership have to do. We load trucks and unload trucks. Anyway, I've had a variety of jobs, but it doesn't matter. And so have you. But it doesn't matter whether you work primarily with brawn or primarily with brain. Whatever job you have, you're going to be interacting with people. And working with people is a challenging thing. So I think that's why this text today about the life of David is so beneficial and helpful for us, because we all rub shoulders with people. We're all interacting with people. So what can David help us with? Well, God took David, remember? He's the shepherd boy king. He's working with smelly sheep. And he learned a lot about how to serve God's people by serving smelly sheep for a number of years. Sometimes God has us in places like that too, getting us ready for what he wants us to do next. But David excelled as a shepherd of God's people because he learned to be a shepherd boy for the Lord out under the stars, keeping sheep. So what did he learn? What can we learn from David about being a good shepherd to the people that God has entrusted under our care? So I'd like you to look at 2 Samuel, just as by way of introduction, chapter 19, just a couple verses now, verses 9 and 10. Then I'll give you the setting. Chapter 19, 2 Samuel, verses 9 and 10. And the Bible says, all the people were at strife throughout all the tribes of Israel, saying, the king saved us out of the hand of our enemies. He delivered us out of the hand of the Philistines, and now he has fled out of the hand the land for Absalom. And Absalom, whom we anointed over us, is dead in battle. Now, therefore, why speak ye not a word of bringing the king back? Here's the setting, briefly, what's going on. Remember Absalom? Before Christmas, we talked about his coup, his attempt, and he failed. In fact, Joab kills him on the battlefield. It's done. There is no more coup. Well, David is next, is rightly the king, and he heads back to Jerusalem to retake the throne. But he's not presumptuous. He waits for an invitation from the leadership in Judah to invite him back to the throne. And they're kind of somewhat dragging their feet. Eventually, though, with some persuasion, I don't want to go into all the details, they do send a delegation out to the Jordan River. And this is some miles away, about 10, 12 miles east of Jerusalem. He's at the Jordan River. They send out a delegation. In this delegation are the people that we're going to meet. We're going to get three groups of people. I'm going to group them in three categories anyway. We're going to learn something about how to handle people from what David encounters here. So we have three groups of people. We have people who are hurtful. We have people who are helpful. And we have people who are harmful. So those are the words today. Helpful, hurtful, and harmful. Let's look, first of all, at people who hurt you. Good shepherds know how to handle people. They handle them with care, even the ones who hurt us. You know, you've all in this room had people who have hurt you. Might have been a family member, might have been a co-worker, might have been some other relationship, a work associate. But at a time when you were vulnerable in your life, they let you down, or they took advantage of you, and it hurt. I want you to notice that you're not alone in this. This happened to David. Let me give you a couple of examples. The first one is Shimei. We're going to identify this as people who curse you. This really happened to David. Let me tell you a little bit of background about Shimei. We meet him first back in chapter number 16. David is on his way out of Jerusalem. Absalom is leading a force in to take the city. And David knows he can't defend himself, so he's leaving town temporarily. He goes out over the hills east of Jerusalem. And on his descent away from the city, it's always a descent from Jerusalem, whichever way you go, because Jerusalem is up in elevation. So it is a descent to go from Jerusalem, all right? Just geographic point, all right? So he's descending, and Shimei comes out, and he curses David. He lets David have it with his words. We have that up 16:13. Is that the next reference? Thanks. As David and his men went by the way, Shimei went along on the hillside over against him and cursed as he went and threw stones at him and cast dust. So as fast as he's casting his insults, he's also casting stones. Wow. Not a very nice fellow at all. And it would have been easy for David to turn tit for tat and to level the boom on this guy once David comes back into the city. But Shimei is in this delegation that's come out to the Jordan River. And I know what Shimei's thinking. Boy, I better make up with this king fast or it's for me. And that's exactly what Shimei does. He begs really for forgiveness. But you know what? Not everybody's as interested in forgiveness as they ought to be. And Abishai, one of David's generals, says to him, we have that verse up next? No, it's in the text. Verse number 21, 2 Samuel 19:21. But Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, answered and said, shall not Shimei be put to death for this, because he cursed the Lord's anointed? I want you to notice how David responds. Verse 23, just a verse, jump down a couple verses. Therefore the king said unto Shimei, thou shalt not die. And the king swore unto him. He let the guy have a bye. He let the guy have mercy. David had the power to let him have it, and he went gentle on it. David is big on forgiveness. And you know, if you're going to be a good people person, if you're going to shepherd other people well, you've got to be big on forgiveness. You know, we live in sinner's world. Everywhere you go, people are going to be stepping on your toes. They're going to be saying things that hurt. They're going to be messing up your paperwork. It's going to happen. And you know what? You could be like the rest of the world to let people have it and just, you know, that person needs a piece of my mind. They're so scatterbrained. They'll never think straight. And you know what? Sometimes even Christians are guilty of leveling the boom on other people. And as a result, we really minimize our ability to influence them for Christ and have any positive impact on that person. So we need to be big on forgiveness. If we're going to shepherd others, we must learn to dole out lots of forgiveness. To let people have bias, to let people have mercy. You know, in fact, we as Christians, we of all people know something about forgiveness and ought to be able to share it, right? Because we have a great Savior who was big on forgiveness with us. And if you're like me, he's big on forgiveness with you every single day. And he reminds you, you know, you shouldn't have said that. You know, you were rough in your attitude. You know, you were wrong to do that, and he's always there to forgive you. to have that same kind of spirit. Colossians chapter 3, verse 13 reminds us that we ought to forbear, be very patient, long-suffering with others, forgiving one another. If any have a quarrel against any, even as Christ forgave you, so also do you. Do ye. We need that reminder today. Hey, here's another one. People who are hurtful. Shimei, big hurt to David, but David had mercy on him. Another fellow is Mephibosheth. What a name. That's a mouthful right there, Mephibosheth. We talked about him last fall. I believe it was in the month of November. Remember the guy lame in both of his feet? He's Jonathan's only living son. And David had made this promise to Jonathan, I'll take care of your kids, and vice versa, if one of us passes on first. And so David invited Mephibosheth to the palace, and he lived as the king's son in the palace. David flees because of Absalom, again descending from the city of Jerusalem. But somebody didn't come along. His name is Mephibosheth. Ooh. Ziba, who was identified with Mephibosheth because he was Saul's servant and looked after Mephibosheth's possessions, told the king while the king was fleeing, you know what? Mephibosheth didn't want to come because he's hoping maybe to take the throne while you're away. And he slandered Mephibosheth. And you know what? David's coming back. Mephibosheth is out there by the Jordan River ready to receive the king back into the city of Jerusalem. And Mephibosheth says, hey, it's not the way you heard. You heard it this way, but let me tell you, it really wasn't. In fact, there's some evidence in the text that Mephibosheth is telling the truth. Are you curious about that? Sometimes you wonder, well, you know, Ziba said this and Mephibosheth said this. Which guy's telling the truth? David definitely gives the benefit of the doubt, but there's some reason why we ought to believe that. Look down with me at verse 24. This is 2 Samuel 19:24. Mephibosheth, the son of Saul, came down to meet the king and had neither dressed his feet. He didn't wash his feet. Now, I wouldn't want to be very close to him like that, but the whole time David was away, he didn't wash his feet, nor trim his beard. He didn't keep up with his personal cleanliness, and he didn't wash his clothes. Now, that's just over the top right there. It's all in verse 24. It's in the Bible. Yeah. Speak the truth. All right. Well, if he really had aspirations to the throne, he probably would have looked more kingly than not washing his feet, not trimming his beard, not washing his clothes. It's pretty good evidence that what Ziba had said was incorrect. Either way, David could have leveled the boom on Mephibosheth, but instead he showed mercy again to people who initially had hurt him by not supporting him when he was on his exile away from the city of Jerusalem when Absalom started his coup. This leads me to talk about something I think is very important here. It's the ability to take wrongs rather than give them. Taking wrongs rather than give them. On two separate occasions, David could have let these men have it. Instead, he didn't threaten them with a lawsuit, threaten to take his fair share back or to make them pay. All kinds of things we hear today. Instead, he didn't retaliate. And this is the attitude I believe God would have us to do as we shepherd other people. My first ministry, there was a man, he was a deacon in our church. His name was Mr. Hatfield. I like Mr. Hatfield. He and I got to be great friends. But our friendship was brief. I only knew him for about 3 years. He died when he was 92. So I knew him when he was 89. That was my first introduction. What a neat guy. Mr. Hatfield, he loved the Lord. And he loved serving at the church. Here's a guy, he's 90 years old, and because a light bulb goes out in the lobby before I can get there to change it, he's up on a ladder, a 6-foot ladder, an old wooden ladder. You know the ones that go like this when you get on them, trying to change a light bulb in the lobby of our church. Not a good idea. The Lord protected Mr. Hatfield many times, but he loved the Lord and loved keeping up with the church. But there's something that Mr. Hatfield really taught me about life. And it's the ability to take wrongs rather than make wrong or to give out wrong to other people. And I don't think anybody else that I know demonstrated this any better than Mr. Hatfield. I'm only going to give you three examples
from his life.
He died in August of 2003. And so, but these are still vivid reminders in my mind about him. All right, Mr. Hatfield. He's in his 90s, and he's got this little Dodge Colt. This Dodge Colt up on the screen, so people know what a Dodge Colt looks like. All right, so he's in this little dinky car, all right? He's a tall, slender fellow, you know, and he kind of gets in there, and he's behind the wheel like this, you know? And he's just driving. I think he's going to the grocery store, just doing a simple little errand. Near his home, he's on a narrow street in our town, and some guy whips him with his big pickup truck down the narrow street and takes the middle of the road. You ever been there? Mr. Hatfield grabs the wheel, and he spins and veers out to miss him, and barely just catches the corner of a bumper on a parked car on the edge of the road. Just enough to kind of rip in on the passenger side, the fender on the front, just rip a nice gash in the side of his car. The other driver never saw it, never stopped, never did anything. You know, he never fixed that thing, did he? Never fixed the Colt. He just took the wrong and went about his, you know, and when he told me the story, he wasn't even upset. He was just like, hey, you'll never believe what happened to me this week. Let me tell you about it. He's very low-key about this. This isn't the only time. Within a year of his death, he developed bladder cancer and eventually it took his life. But within a year of his death, he wanted to get his house in order. His health wasn't good, so he hired some college kids. He hired some college kids to paint his house. They had a business name. It wasn't just a bunch of goof-offs, but under business, they did paint his house, and he agreed on a color. He wanted pretty much the same thing. And they painted half of his house in flat sheen and half of his house in subgloss. All right? Now, it was the same color. But to the obvious naked eye, there was a big difference. And you know what? I would have been steamed. I went down and tried to lobby on his behalf with the company. You need to fix this. Somebody just blew it. They ran out of paint, and they went back, and they ordered more and got the wrong sheen. Certainly wasn't Mr. Hatfield's fault. But you know what that guy did? He lobbied with them. He and his wife talked with them. But when the bill finally came due, you know what? He just paid the bill. And he went on about his life as if they had done the job correctly. Now, that is not me. Listen, this company did me wrong, and they're going to have it. And you know what? He was okay with that. And it's like, this is otherworldly kind of living and thinking. Well, you know, you might just pass it off. He's just an old codger, you know. He's just got old age gentility, and it's just the kind of guy he is, you know. Because when you get old, you know, most of your fight is out of you. Don't take that personally. I learned something late about Mr. Hatfield. It wasn't just old age gentility with Mr. Hatfield. You see, Mr. Hatfield lived in Iowa and he had a farm. And he met a girl at church. And he was married. And it was one of those sweet church weddings everybody anticipated. Those two should have come together a long time ago, kind of deal. Shortly after they got married, he finds out she's carousing in town with other men. He's a deacon in the church. This isn't supposed to happen. This isn't those neat little church stories where everybody does right and lives happily ever after. He tried to do right. He tried to get counseling, tried to get help to fix his marriage. A little after a year, I believe they were married. That marriage ended in a painful divorce. You know, he spent the majority of his adult years as a grown man as a bachelor, eventually moved to California where I met him, had a job there. I think most people just thought he was a bachelor by choice. Here's this guy bouncing around, you know, doesn't have... He loved the Lord, though, kept serving the church, served as a deacon in the church out there in California where I met him. And at age 58, another gal came into his life. And they were married. And he spent 34 happy years married. You know, I barely got that story out of Mr. Hatfield. He never made a big deal about it, didn't complain about how that woman wrecked his life. He just went on loving God and serving. He took loans, and it was the attitude of his whole life. David was wronged by Shimei. Maybe by Mephibosheth. Either way, he was big on forgiveness and showed mercy to those who hurt him. If you don't get anything else out of the message today, we all need this reminder. We need to be heavy on forgiveness and a lot of light on the wrong and hurting other people, letting them have it. All right, number two. He's met Shimei in this delegation by the Jordan. Mephibosheth, we're ready to talk about Barzillai now, all right? He's got a bunch of men he's meeting. This is point number two if you're following by outline today. It's the people who are helpful. What do you do with people who are helpful? Well, he's fleeing Jerusalem. There's another man. His name is Barzillai. He's kind of like Mr. Hatfield in age because he's somewhat older. But when David flees over the mountain to leave the city of Jerusalem, he's got all of his entourage from the palace, his nobles, his lords, his wives, and he has no way to provide for them in the wilderness. And back in chapter 17, and verse number 28 and 29, we read about what Barzillai did. He brought beds and basins and earthen vessels and wheat and barley and flour and parched corn and beans and lentils and parched hulls. Any of you have that on your menu today? None of it is on my menu today, and I'm grateful for that, all right? 29, and honey and butter, maybe some of that, and sheep and cheese of kind for David and for the people that were with him to eat, for they said the people is hungry and weary and thirsty in the wilderness. Now here's a guy who puts two together. David's fleeing Jerusalem. He didn't bring his refrigerator, so he's going to need food. And so he gathers up some food, and he goes down to, I believe it was Mahanaim, and gives David the food that he needs to support his the group that he's... Well, this guy's done a huge kindness. It reminds me of this fact. While there are people in your life that have hurt you, some of you can recall names, usually the people that hurt you in life, a handful, less hopefully, but the people who help you, it's a long list. This person, and this person, and this person, and this person. Barzillai is just one example of a man who helped David in a very difficult time during the coup of Absalom. What do you do with people who help you? Well, you do what David did. You try in some way to repay their kindness and generosity. Let's look at that. This is chapter 19 and verse 33. The king said to Barzillai, "Come thou over with me, and I will feed thee with me in Jerusalem." All right, here's the terms. Remember Mephibosheth? You come to my palace and I'll take care of you. Barzillai, don't you work anymore. Don't you worry about it. You looked after me. Let me finish out your days. I'll take care of you. And you know what Barzillai said to him? You know, I grew up in this town over here. My parents are buried here. I've lived my whole life here. I'm going back to that town. That's where they're going to bury me too. He didn't want to go to Jerusalem. But he said, I have this servant. It may have actually been his son. Servant may just have been a title of humility. Chimham. Hey, why don't you do this for Chimham? And so Chimham goes back, and David happily agrees to help him out. I want to ask you, the people who have helped you out, how have you demonstrated gratitude or thankfulness? You know, sometimes we can be short on the thankfulness and the gratitude for the people that have done us the most good in life. And this is really something we can do to shepherd people better, is to be big on giving thanks. One example I'm going to call your attention to is the Apostle Paul. This is Romans chapter 16, and I believe it's the next slide. It's helping us to remember the helpers that God put in our lives. Romans 16 is a long battery of names, but David is remembering people in Rome that have done him good and have helped him out. Here's some examples. Hey, remember Phoebe, our sister, which is the servant of the church, which is at Cenchrea? That you receive her and the Lord's become a saint, that you assist her, whatever her business is, that she has need of you, for she hath been a succorer of many, and of myself also, a helper. Verse 3, Greek Priscilla and Aquila, my helpers in Christ Jesus. 4, who have for my life laid down their own necks. Let's go to verse number 5 of this passage. Likewise, greet the church that is in their house. Salute. Well-beloved, Epaphras. Thanks. Somebody else say that. Here. 6. Greet Mary, who bestowed much labor on us. He mentioned some other names in verse 7 and then jumped down to verse 9. Salute Urban, our helper in Christ. Hey, thank you for helping me. And this person helped me. And that person over there helped me on my way. And I want to thank this person. He went on record as thanking the people that had made a difference in his life. Have you done this? You know, we just come through the holiday season, right? Many of you received a lot more than you really needed. And some of you have already taken back the things that you didn't want. All right? But we all received something. Even if it was more pounds around the waist than we wanted to because of all the sweets. Just ask you. Have you gone on record and thanked the people who did you good over the holidays? How about others in life? Certainly we owe a greater debt of gratitude to our parents than we'll ever realize. And how about the teachers who invested in you, the ones that gave you a word of encouragement when you were ready to quit? How about them? Have you said anything? Well, I could let Pastor Baker, where did he go? He's in here somewhere, give a testimony. People recently from his ministry in New York have contacted him and shared how he's been a blessing to them in their lives of ministry. What a difference that would make. You know, someone just get a note of appreciation. I appreciate you for teaching this class, or I appreciate you for teaching this sermon, or I appreciate you because you invested in me. Or thanks. Maybe it's a colleague at work who taught you a new software program that your company was implementing. And giving thanks to the people going on record that you appreciate what they've done. Honestly, if you gave a note like this, most of them would be dumbfounded, hardly know what to say. Might even make them cry. Hey, but as God's people, we should be big on forgiveness. Number 2, we should be big on thankfulness, gratefulness. David was for those who had helped him. Finally, let's talk about number 3, people who are harmful. If you need a little bit more help with this category, let's just call it the people who are problem people in your life. You don't have any problem people in your life, right? All smooth sailing. David had a couple problem people. We're going to finish out. These are in chapter 20 of our text. Problem people. One of the men in the delegation that came out to meet David that day was a man named Sheba. He represents people who resist us. There's some dispute between Israel and Judah over who has more right to bring him back and declare David king. But to me, this is absolutely silly. Both Israel and Judah are one nation at this time, and they need a king, and they're going to fight over which one has more of a right to bring him back. Does Judah get to bring him back, or does Israel? All right? Sheba is among the delegation that's out there, and he's fighting for Israel. And there's a dispute. Let's read about this. This is chapter 20 and verse number... Oh, that's one verse. Make that one disappear. It's in the text. Chapter 19, verse 43. This is, to me, a little hilarious. Chapter 19, verse 43. And the men of Israel answered the men of Judah and said, we have 10 parts in the king. We have more of a right to the king than you do. Get off our turf. Right? That was a colloquial, my critical edition. We have also more right in David than ye. Why then did ye despise us, that our advice should not be first had in bringing back our king? And the words of the men of Judah were fiercer than the words of the men of Israel. You know, you put two men in a room, they'll find some reason to fight, it seems. I don't know what that is, what it is about men, but they wanted to fight over who had the bigger right to bring David back and put him on his throne. Sheba is among them. He doesn't like how it's going because the men of Judah shout him down. So you know what he does? All right, army, all of you with Israel, we have no part in this king, and he takes all the people. Half of probably.
probably half or better of David's defense force, and he sets off back to Israel. In fact, he doesn't just go back to Israel and leave David with half of his army. He goes all the way to the northern part of Israel. I should put this on a map. Jerusalem is down here, southern part of Israel, Judah area. He takes them all the way to Abel Beth Maacah. How many of you know where Abel Beth Maacah is? Didn't think so. I was fascinated by this. I wanted to know where it was, so I looked it up. You know what? It is 4 miles west of the city of Dan in Israel. Does anybody know where the city of Dan is? It is one of the northernmost cities in the land of Israel. And he goes up to one of them that's not too far away. Just the next mile and you're out of the nation of Israel. That's where he took. I think he was a little bit afraid. So he holds up there, and David sends an army with Amasa. Amasa, did I say it right? How do you say it? Help me out. There's too many names in the message. I'm getting them all mixed up. All right, Amasa. And he says, look, we need to go take care of Sheba, because if we don't, we're going to have a big problem. It could have split his kingdom right in half. And Sheba could have led another king, and then you had David in the south, and it could have been a real mess. See what David does? He gets on top of it. And what's interesting to me about this is that David knows the balance. We've already seen his gentility with Shimei and Mephibosheth, his kindness repaid to Barzillai. Here's a gentleman with a soft touch, but then he notices a problem, and he could be firm-fisted when he needs to be. And shepherding takes firmness from time to time. Hey, and Jesus kind of hinted at this when he talked about our ministry in Matthew chapter 10, verse 16. I send you forth as sheep in the midst of wolves. Be ye therefore wise as serpents, harmless as doves. David seems to be able to maintain the right balance. And if you're going to be a shepherd, you've got to do both. I've got to have firmness at times, and I've got to learn the gentle touch. You know, often we kind of err to the firmness side when we really ought to err to the gentle side. But both are needed in good shepherding. David demonstrates that for us. He also does so with the man named Joab. We've bumped into Joab before. What a guy. Great fighter on the battlefield, but boy, he is like a volcano waiting to happen. He's already killed Abner in cold blood, who defected from Saul's camp and came to David's camp. He's already killed Absalom, even though he was told not to kill Absalom. And now, while Amasa is leading the army north, Joab joins up in Gibeon, a few miles north of Jerusalem, and he comes over and in deceit takes Amasa's beard, grabs him, and gives him a kiss. You know, like they do in some cultures. Meanwhile, and we're not quite sure what happens, you can read the text later, chapter 20, verses, what is it, 16 through, no, that's not right, chapter 9 through 16 or so, he kind of stumbles or something and lets his sword fall out on the ground. And he picks his sword up with his left hand, which is a non-threatening position. Most people are right-handed, except the wise ones and smart ones like me. But everybody else uses their right hand. He used his left hand, picked up the dagger, and while he's kissing him, sticks him and kills another man in cold blood. You know, David knew that Joab was a problem, and he eventually has his son take care of it later. But that's also a person that needed firmness. Why do I say this? You know, in ministry, to be a good shepherd, or be a good shepherd in your home, you have to have a great deal of wisdom, and thankfully God promises that. The next verse on the screen is James 1, verse 5. If any man lack wisdom, let him ask of God, who gives to all men liberally and upbraideth not, it shall be given him. We need wisdom. Do I need to be firm? Do I need to be gentle? Do you have a problem person in your life? Are you talking to God about what your next move with that person should be? Really, that's the wisdom of a shepherd, asking God for help. Let me finish up the message today, right? The way of a shepherd, a good shepherd like David, is to handle people with care. And David seems to be able to do that with quite a bit of balance. If I could sum up the message, I'd put it together this way and say, I don't care what your time of life is. If you're a mom, you shepherd people in your home. If you
go to work, you shepherd, even though you may not be over them as a supervisor or foreman, you have a shepherding influence on the people, your co-workers at work. If you're in school, you're shepherding people around you. All the time, people are coming in contact with you, and you have a choice how you're going to treat them and how you're going to influence them, and you can do so with firmness or gentleness. It reminded me of a quote of Teddy Roosevelt. Some of you know this one, right? Speak softly and carry a big stick. Now, sometimes you need the big stick. I wish the other words in this quote were made a little bit bigger, because we could really use more speak softly. You get upset, lower your voice. Deal with people gently, even the ones that hurt you and harm you, and God will enable you to have a greater influence. I'm going to finish with a story. Some of you know the oil tycoon named John D. Rockefeller. Let's talk about him for just a moment. I'll bring his picture up. He built the Standard Oil Empire. And not surprisingly, he was a man of persistence, hard work, and great demands. And what he demanded of himself, he demanded of the people that worked for him. And his employees knew it. One day, one of his executives made a $2 million mistake. And this would be some years ago, so it really was a big deal. You know, $2 million that maybe doesn't have the impact that it would have had 50, 60 years ago. It was a big deal. Afraid of Rockefeller's reaction, all the executives made themselves scarce. No one wanted to see him or cross his path. One man, unfortunately, had an appointment with Rockefeller, and there was no getting out of it. He had to go into that office and see his employer face to face. So as he approached the oil tycoon's desk, Rockefeller looked up from a piece of paper on which he was writing. "I guess you've heard about the man who made the $2 million mistake." The other executive in the office just shook his head. "Well, I've been sitting here," Rockefeller said, "listing all of our friend's good qualities on this sheet of paper. And I've discovered in the past that he's made us many more times than the amount he lost for us today by his one mistake. His good points far outweigh this one human error. So I think we ought to forgive him. Don't you?" Not what we expected. And what kind of impact would you have if you responded this way, in a way that people didn't expect either? What kind of power would your life and testimony have for Jesus if you shepherd your people this way? May God help us. Shall we pause for prayer? Father,